For several weeks, we've been hearing from the first letter of John. I think we're in the fifth of 6 weeks of that. Let's be clear that the first letter of John takes the Gospel of John's name, takes the same John, but it's probably, almost certainly not the same author, probably from the same community, expressing some similar themes. Different authors, but again, similar ethos and principles and goals. And we hear that intersection very strongly in the readings today. We've been hearing kind of jumping around in the Gospel of John. And today the reading was chosen. It's normally more associated with Maundy Thursday and Holy Week. But we got it again today, perhaps to make that intersection with 1 John. Last week in the first letter of John, we heard the famous passage that includes this, God is love. I had other ideas for last week, and so I didn't address that then, but I think it's worth addressing now, particularly in the context of this passage from the Gospel of John. God is love. I think some of us like to hang on to that. It's a beautiful statement in itself, and I think perhaps one of the reasons that we like to hang on to it is because it gives us a different way of thinking about God, one that allows us to enter into thinking about theology, into understanding God in some different ways. Some of us, hearing God is love, is probably a bit of a relief. Maybe some of the other descriptors for God that we find in the Bible don't feel quite so good to us. Maybe they don't feel so warm and fuzzy. Maybe they even make us feel distant towards God. And hearing God is love may be a way for us to draw closer to God. Now, aside from wishing a happy Mother's Day, I tend not to mention Mother's Day or Father's Day for that matter of fact in my preaching. I'll wish happy Mother's Day, happy Father's Day in the announcements, but I tend not to be amongst the preachers who will actually preach a whole sermon around Mother's Day or Father's Day. And there are many of us who feel this way. There's kind of two schools of thought on that. Yes, you should always do it, and no, you should never do it. And the reason I come down on the don't do it side is because, frankly, Mother's Day and Father's Day can be really loaded for a lot of people. It's not so simple as saying that, you know, we all had great parents and that we all are great parents. Many people have difficult relationships with their parents. Many people have difficult relationships with their children. Many people don't have children and wanted to have children. It's a complicated prospect when you go down that path for a sermon. That said, one of the most common descriptors for God is God is Father. We hear that throughout the Scriptures. We hear that quite frequently in the Gospels, and we hear it especially quite a bit in John, and we heard it in John today. And so, you know, we have that. So the idea of God as Father is certainly part of the tradition, and it's an important part of the tradition. It's a part of the tradition that really resonates for many people. For many people, that is an important part of their piety, is understanding God, the first person of the Trinity, as God as Father. And we can't avoid it. I don't know if you realize it, but a baptism is considered valid only if it is pronounced in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. If I use any other words during a baptism, that baptism is not considered to be a valid Christian baptism. Maybe you knew that, but maybe you didn't. We hear it in the Lord's Prayer. We hear it everywhere. And yet, for some of us, it can be problematic. And even if it's not problematic, it can't be the only way that we describe God or attempt to approach God. There was an article this week, probably because it was Mother's Day, called, it was from Sojourners, actually, and the name of it was Three Ways That Calling God Mother Transforms Us. And the three ways that they identified in this article were, it changes our theology. It questions how we treat mothers in the church. It transforms the way we support mothers in public leadership. So I do think having some alternative ways, even some ways that are associated with parenting, can be helpful. I want to say that there's still more, but I want to hinge back to that first item in that list. It changes our theology. And I think that's a really important thing for us to keep in mind. What we call God affects our theology. It affects our thinking about God. It affects our thinking about the church. It affects our thinking about one another, which feeds into those other three points that are mentioned in that article. And so that's one reason why many in the church have been endeavoring to explore other descriptors for God and in ways to help us understand God in different ways. It came up this week during the weekly clergy call. There's a weekly Zoom call of all the clergy and wardens with the bishops since COVID. And one of the clergy brought that up this week and encouraging us all to be more expansive in the ways that we talk about God as clergy and in our conversations with other people and in our worship. So today, maybe today's passage in the Gospel of John, even though Jesus calls God Father, maybe there are some other things in there that we can mine to open up our conceptions of God, open up our theology, open up the way that we interact with one another and with the world. And so one of the things I want to look at is that there are three words in Greek that for love. There are three, or there's actually four. We'll leave one of them aside. It's kind of a Stoic word. But the three common Greek words for love are eros. That's not really in the Bible. And eros is the word used for romantic love. I think calling it romantic love probably tames it just a little bit because that's what we do in the church. But of course, eros is the source of the word erotic. So I'll let you take that where it leads you. But the two words generally in the New Testament for love are agape and phileo. And some commentators will say that agape is used in some particular ways and phileo is used in some other particular ways. When they try to make that distinction, agape is kind of described as being more of a self-giving love, kind of a charitable love, so a love that we can pour on anyone in the community, for instance, just wide and far, far and wide. In contrast, phileo might be described as brotherly love. So phileo, philos being a word for brother. But I think even that is too limiting. And so it's really a love of relationship, a love that is expressed in relationship with another person. And so what we find in this passage from John is that when Jesus is talking about love, he's using the word agape, but when the word that's actually friend in that passage is actually the Greek word that comes from related to phileo, it's philos. So friend there is really, you know, the person that I love. It's the person that I am in a loving relationship with. And I think that delving into that a little bit, for me, it gives some depth to this passage. And so it when I started thinking about it, it helped me think about it a little bit differently. And I'll say also that others say that there's really no point in trying to separate agape and phileo in the New Testament scriptures, that they're both used in different places, not consistently trying to say one thing or the other, that the Gospel of John uses them both and doesn't really make a distinction in which one he uses where, that they really are going after the same thing. And what they're going after is a relational love that is expressed between people who are making a commitment to be loving towards one another. Not in a romantic relationship, but in a relationship that we might call friends. But again, I think calling it you know, a person that I love, I think gives it a you know, being clear about that gives it a depth. And, you know, thinking about, you know, how do we, when I think about who are the friends that I say I love you to, you know, that I don't just say I love you to my wife, I say it to other people. And I think it's power, there's power in naming that and in exploring what we mean by the scriptures in tapping into that inclination. So the idea of, you know, Martin Luther King's beloved community, I'm sure it must come from this, that philos as beloved, a person that I love, and the idea that as Christians, part of what we're doing is building up a community of beloved people and hopefully taking that out and broadening that community, and not just to even to Christians, but throughout broader communities. So with that, you know, I also want to shift gears a little bit. I've been reading Bishop Michael Curry's book. It came out, I don't know, 6 months or so, Love is the Way. Some parishes have been doing this as a book study. I decided to give it a read. You know, that you all know that Bishop Michael Curry talks about love all the time. That's his subject. Anytime we hear him preach, that's going to be the subject. And I had, you know, kind of mixed feelings about the book, but there were a lot of things that I did like about it. And part of what I liked about it was I learned a lot about him. So it's filled with stories about his life and what love really means to him and how love has been a part of his life in some unexpected ways. And so I think those stories have been really helpful to me, actually. So one of the stories that he talks about is... and again, part of what I did not know about him is that when he was a boy, like 10 years old, his mother fell ill and then fell into a coma and was in a coma for 5 or 6 years before she died. And so, and it happened immediately. It was an unexpected illness. She went in the hospital and never went home again. And members of his extended family, members of the church community, his father was also an Episcopal priest, members of their church community, other friends, really stepped up and provided a lot of child care, a lot of care for him and his sister for years while they were growing up. And so, yes, he missed his mother, but he never felt like he lacked love because so many people stepped up and made sure that he had concrete caring and concern and attention and love expressed in many, many different ways. Love expressed as food, love expressed as getting him home from school, love expressed as attention and just being present with him. And it's really, you know, it's a powerful thing to think about. And it, you know, it gets me to thinking about, you know, how are the ways that I have experienced love in my own life? And how do I want to be sure that I continue to give those expressions of love to other people? And, you know, that's part of what we attempt to do in Christian community is have those expressions and exchanges of love with one another, remembering that we are all lovable people, capable of giving and receiving love. When I think about beloved community, the strong example of that I've personally experienced, I would say, was when I was in seminary. When I was the student, Jackie was there as a spouse. Morgan was in third, fourth, fifth grades, and we lived in an apartment building that was owned by the seminary, which was really great because otherwise I don't know that we would have been able to even afford to live in Berkeley, California, as a student, and So this apartment building had, I believe, 11 units in it, all occupied by students. I think 10 of the 11 units were occupied by students who were in my seminary year. So we basically showed up together and were graduating together. And we really bonded very closely. And it, you know, it was one student family bought a barbecue and put it in the courtyard, and we had a courtyard, so that was nice. We had some common space, and somebody would put something on the grill, and the next thing you know, everybody else would see what was happening and bring something out to put on the grill, and we had an impromptu community barbecue dinner with no planning whatsoever. It just would happen. If somebody got sick, there would be food left at the door. It just wasn't even thought about. It just, again, it just happened. The second summer that we were there, one of my classmates at around age 50 had a stroke. And again, completely unexpected. And I think four of the students were off, including me, were off in Philadelphia for a conference for seminarians, a preaching conference, teaching us how to be better preachers, hopefully. And so I wasn't there, and some of us were away and felt really disconnected. We were really upset not to be there. But the community generated support, and there was, you know, there was an amazing level of care for the seminarian and her wife. And related to this, there will be a point here. Jackie actually went to the hospital to see Kate. Now, mind you, Jackie hadn't even discerned her own calling to ordained ministry at that point, but she was going off to the hospital, to the emergency room, to be with our friend, our beloved. And when she got there, they asked her, "Are you a family member?" And Jackie being Jackie, she said yes. And so, you know, yeah, she was a family member, I suppose. And so the nurse went in to see Kate and said to Kate, "Your sister's here." And Kate started to say, "My sister's not here. My sister's in, I forget what state, some other state." And then she saw Jackie and went, "Oh, my other sister. Oh, that sister, my sister Jackie. Oh, yeah." And so Jackie went in seamlessly and was able to be with her. And of course, you know, probably part of why she pulled it off was because, honestly, it took Kate quite a while to be able to speak again well. She had to relearn how to read. And she had, again, significant support from the community. I mean, the people working with her with flashcards to help her learn to read again. And she still was able to graduate with our class. So, you know, again, thinking about, you know, I guess I would call you, these are my stories that I thought of because of Bishop Curry's stories. And that's part of what I think he's doing with this, is to pull those stories out of us, to encourage us to pull those stories, to listen to one another's stories of the ways that we have experienced love within this community, outside this community, as means of growing that love. I think that helps us to be loving in other contexts. But I think it's also about that we're experiencing God because we're experiencing love through one another. And I think we just don't want to forget that. That when we experience love through our relationships with one another, we are experiencing God's love. And that's how we know that God is love. And that's how we grow in our conviction that God is love. And that strengthens us to do the things that God calls us to do. Both 1 John and the Gospel of John mention the commandments. And even if we go back to the Ten Commandments, those commandments are mostly focused on how do we be in community with one another, and how do we treat one another, and how do we support one another. And so Jesus distills that, of course, into the great commandment that you love one another as I have loved you. He calls us into this word abiding, this living together and with one another. The image used last week and a few chapters earlier in John is the image of the vine, the grapevine, which is really, again, a single organism of which we are all a part. And so that abiding in love is really an image that I think we can go back to. But finally, you know, what I want to remind us is that when we talk about friend, philos, or beloved, Jesus is one of those people. You know, it's not Jesus saying, "I've called you friends." Well, so I'm your friend too. And so that friendship, that swirling of love, is also with Jesus in that mix. And so when we think about the names that we might call God, Father, Mother, many, many, many other names for God, Holy One, Creator. Maybe this is also a signal to us that we also call God friend. We call God beloved. And so in that, it's a two-way relationship. And so, you know, maybe that's helpful as we think about our own theologies and our own relationships with God, and how can we approach God in a way that is meaningful to us and that helps us to grow in love with God and with one another. And so thinking of God as my beloved, as your beloved, as and me as God's beloved, you as God's beloved, maybe that helps to call us into this kind of swirling of love. We're going into Trinity Sunday in a couple of weeks, and that relationship of love that binds the three persons of the Trinity together and is the nature of their relationship. I think that's what we're talking about here as well, that this binding and swirling of love that flows back and forth and around and is really this vehicle of goodness and holiness and divinity, and is something that we all have the opportunity to access and to grow in and with and through. Amen.